Reading Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House on the Prairie books is still a rite of passage for millions of children all over the world. For one entire generation, the actress Melissa Gilbert is Laura. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'll talk with Half Pint herself. Melissa Gilbert has just published My Prairie Cookbook, Memories and Frontier Food from My Little House to Yours. We'll talk food and we'll reminisce about the strength and wisdom of Pa and Ma, rekindle that rivalry with Nellie Olson, and talk about Melissa Gilbert's post-Little House life and career. We'll also find out what Melissa's favorite Little House episodes are, and we want to hear from you. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Almost exactly 40 years ago, the television version of Little House on the Prairie debuted on NBC, starring a very young Melissa Gilbert as Laura. The series ran through the spring of 1983, and then Melissa played Laura for one more season on Little House, A New Beginning. Melissa Gilbert has had a full life since the series aired, but her latest book is a gift to her most loyal fans. It's called My Prairie Cookbook, Memories and Frontier Food from My Little House to Yours. And she is here in Iowa at the very beginning of her book tour. She'll be in Cedar Rapids and Iowa City today in conjunction with Prairie Lights Bookstore and Nubo Books. She'll be at the Cedar Rapids Public Library this afternoon at 2 and the Iowa City Public Library tonight at 7 o'clock. And she is here with me in the studio today. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me. What a gorgeous day, too.
It is a beautiful day out here on the prairie.
It is. It's a stunning. It's a good day to plow some fields.
Right. Exactly. Well, I want to go back to your beginnings. I know you grew up in a showbiz family. How did you get started as a child actor? What were the things that you first did?
Well, as you said, my family goes back in show business multiple generations. My grandparents and great grandparents were performers, and my father's mother was an aerialist. My father started out as a kid in the circus as an acrobat, and then became a stand-up comic and an actor and a singer and a dancer and a musician. And my mom was an actress. Her dad was a writer, created The Honeymooners. And somewhere around the age of 2-ish, it was made abundantly clear to the family that I was kind of destined. I mean, I would watch Shirley Temple movies and memorize them and then do all the songs and dances along with them when they were on television. And someone said to my mom, you know, she could do commercials. You should go meet this agent. So my mom took me to the agent, and I went on an audition for a Carter's Baby Clothes commercial, and that was my first job. And my mom swears she didn't tell me to do this. And as far as I remember, I mean, my memory of age 2 is a little fuzzy. Back then, you know, it was 1966, and all of the directors and producers were sitting on the floor cross-legged with long hair and beards. And I walked in the room and walked straight up to the director and climbed in his lap and threw my arms around his neck and kissed him. And he went, "Oh, God, she's it." And I did that with commercials for years and years, and you know, whatever the product was, it was my favorite thing in the whole world. Oh, I love that turkey. My dad uses that deodorant. This is the best toothpaste. Whatever it was, because I just wanted to do it. Even my birth family, because I'm adopted, even my birth family were musicians and dancers and singers. And so it was just a genetic predisposition, and I got placed in the exactly right family. And you know, the show business god smiled down upon me, and I pretty much every audition I went on for commercials or whatever, I got.
Wow.
And then the Little House on the Prairie auditions came along, and I went in, and there were, you know, bunches and bunches of girls, and it came down to, I think, 4 of us that screen tested. And and I found out later, much later, when I was an adult, that when Michael Landon went in to the network, normally they take all the screen tests, and he only took mine and said, "You don't need to see the other ones."
Wow.
And she's it. Otherwise, we don't do it, which I'm glad I didn't know at 9. I mean, at 9, I was just guileless and just running around and having a great time. I tell people all the time, it was the best game of dress up any girl could play.
Well, now a lot of girls played this very same game of dress up. I played that game of dress up. We all played that game of dress up growing up. Had you read the books before you were cast as Laura?
I'd read Little House in the Big Woods because that was sort of it was a school assignment, you know, I think in maybe second grade or somewhere around there was when we started reading them. And then when I got the pilot, I read Little House on the Prairie, the second book, and then I read the rest of the books throughout the course of the show. But, I mean, I didn't know at the time consciously that I was doing research. I was just reading the books, I was Laura and Laura was me. I was her. When I wasn't in school on the set and I had free time and we were outside, I was catching frogs and riding my horse. I had my own horse and I loved all of it. It was so much fun.
Your fans were pretty confused about that. It sounds like maybe even as a child you were a little confused.
That was my family. Now, and then the crew was amazing too. They were like family and stuff. And it was a really fun atmosphere. We didn't work very long days because that crew had been together since Bonanza, some of them even before that on High Chaparral. And Michael created an atmosphere of family. Everybody brought their kids. Everybody brought their dogs. I was in heaven. There was an actual chicken coop where they kept the chickens and I go collect the eggs and take them home. It was as real as it gets. Except for, you know, when they would say, okay, half might go to school. I'd be like, oh, okay. They would say, don't pass go. Don't collect $100. Go to school. And we, but I have to go to the bathroom. Go to school. So
actually go to school or did you have a tutor on the set?
I had a tutor on the set, Mrs. Minear, who actually I pay tribute to in my last book, my children's book, Daisy and Josephine. The little character of Daisy is going on tour with her daddy, who's a musician and a singer and a dancer. And her teacher is Mrs. Minear. And Mrs. Minear took me through everything. I was enrolled in a private school, tough private school in L.A. And we did all 4 years of high school French. We did all the maths. I was taking, you know, college level pre-calculus before everybody else. My assignments were in before everybody else. I graduated from that school with honors because of that woman. And she was just such a great, gentle teacher. And then when we went on hiatus, I would go back to school where Michael Landon's kids went. And that's how we became friends. In fact, I found out that I got the role of Laura from Leslie Landon at the lunch break at school. She came up to me and she said, are you Melissa? And I said, yeah. She said, you're going to be Laura. And my agents didn't know. Nobody knew. And I ran to the office and I called my mom and my mom called them and Leslie got grounded. And we're friends to this day. Because and you know, we had sleepovers all the time at each other's houses, and we were very close personally as well as our families were as well as on camera.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about the Landon family, but I think we should hear just a moment from Little House on the Prairie, and this is actually from the pilot episode, which was really a TV movie. It wasn't really an episode.
It was a TV. My husband, who never watched Little House on the Prairie, saw that. I showed it to him, and he said, that's one of the best movies made for television in the history of television. And I sort of nodded. I went, yeah. So you're going to play something, which there's Kleenex, right? Because I cry every time.
All right. Just here's a moment from that pilot episode.
If I had a remembrance book, I would mark down how it was when we left our little house in the big woods to go west to Indian Territory. We had to go, Pa said, because so many people had come to live in the big woods, there wasn't enough game anymore for him to hunt, and he feared we might go hungry. Ma said we might never again see Grandma and Grandpa, or Aunt Dosia and Aunt Ruby and Uncle George. Though it made me sad, I still thought it a fine thing to go where there had never been a road before.
It's just a moment from the pilot episode of Little House, and Melissa is crying already.
Thanks.
And
I put makeup on today, too. It was gone now.
So that, of course, was the voice of a very young Melissa Gilbert playing Laura. And we've been talking a little bit about Michael Landon, who, of course, played Pa
yes.
in the series. But he was, much more than just an actor on the show. What was his role in Little House on the Prairie?
He was the show's creator, writer, executive producer, director, and star. He did everything, and he did it all brilliantly and seamlessly. And he ran a set that was, you know, everybody wanted to do well. We wanted to make him proud, all of us kids, adults included. There was very little conflict. If somebody didn't do their job or you know, generally it was someone who would come in who wasn't really there with us all the time and held us up and created problems, they were gone. He was a perfectionist, but it all paid off because in my opinion, the show, obviously it stands up. It went into syndication while it was on the air, and it hasn't been off the air in 40 years. All over the world, so that speaks volumes to who he was as a professional. He was hilariously funny on the set too. He kept everything light. He made jokes. I learned a lot of highly inappropriate jokes, also from him. At possibly maybe the wrong age, but we laughed a lot, and I learned a lot from him and from that crew, and how to play poker and how to say really bad words. He as a professional mentor, I couldn't have had a better one. I really couldn't. And my work today, everything I do and the way that I comport myself on a set and the way I sort of feel like setting a tone and being a quarterback, that's all him. That's him.
You lost your father when you were fairly young.
Mm-hmm.
And did Michael become sort of a father figure in your life?
He was already on the way to becoming a secondary father figure. And when my own father passed away, I was 11. We didn't talk about it. It was really interesting because I found out later that everyone was told not to discuss it with me because they didn't want me to get upset, which was interesting. I just a couple years ago, one of our cast members passed away, and I was living in LA at the time, and Karen Grassley flew in, and I picked her up at the airport. We're all still that close.
And in Karen Grassley played Ma. Ma, right.
And we went out for coffee together, and I was talking about stuff. And she said, I owe you a huge apology. She said, you know, when your father passed away, we were all told not to talk to you about it. And she said, and you would come in my dressing room, and we talked about everything all the time, but I didn't talk to you about that. And I read your autobiography, and I read that, you know, it was all sort of washed over, and you carried that pain with you for a really long time because you weren't allowed to let it out. And I'm really sorry. So that part was hard, but at the same time, there was Michael for me to hang on to, and a lot of the stuff that was inside of me because my father died, he let me let out, albeit on camera, which is a little bit dysfunctional.
Right.
But at least I got it out somewhere.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Melissa Gilbert, who was, of course, the star of Little House on the Prairie, the television series. She has a new book out, My Prairie Cookbook, Memories and Frontier Food from My Little House to Yours. She'll be at the Cedar Rapids Public Library this afternoon at 2 and at the Iowa City Public Library tonight at 7. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me in the studio today is Melissa Gilbert. Of course, many, many people know Melissa Gilbert as Laura, the star of Little House on the Prairie, the television series that ran from 1974 really through 1984.
Yep.
And she has a new book out. It's called My Prairie Cookbook, Memories and Frontier Food from My Little House to Yours. We're talking memories this hour. And you are welcome to join our conversation. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can post on our Facebook page. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. She will be at the Cedar Rapids Public Library in conjunction with Nubo Books this afternoon at 2 o'clock. She'll be at the Iowa City Public Library tonight at 7 o'clock in conjunction with Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And just before the break, we were talking about Michael Landon, your relationship with Michael Landon. And growing up in the 70s and 80s, I think no one had his public persona was so squeaky clean, mm-hmm. and so good, and you know, everything you've been saying about him, a lot of it plays into that. I mean, he was Pa for a lot of people. Was there pressure, though? I mean, you had the same kind of image. You were Laura, you were half pint, he was Pa. Was there pressure because everybody in America thought you were perfect people?
Well, yeah, actually there was in a weird way, and it wasn't anything that anybody specifically said or put on me. It was what I heard and gleaned, and you know, I learned doing interviews, never say anything bad, because there were, you know, a couple people on the show that I wasn't necessarily getting along with all too well. One person. And we just had to, you know, say that everything was great and everything was wonderful. And then, you know, as the show sort of progressed and became more popular, I would hear, oh, my God, I want to be just like you. And I was an impressionable kid. So I took on the mantle and took on that responsibility myself and didn't act out in public and would stop whatever I was doing to sign an autograph, even if I was in the middle of putting a bite of food in my mouth. And I felt a certain responsibility later, certainly as I was growing up and going through adolescence and going through all that kind of crazy stuff, to maintain a front in public and not misbehave in public and never get in trouble. And you know, I was already an overachiever to begin with, clearly, but what we talked about by me going into every interview and, you know, whatever the product was saying, it was my favorite just to get the job.
Right, right.
So I was pretty good at, you know, being a jolly, chipper, cheerful soldier was what I kind of felt like. And so that was, it was not hard. It got hard later, you know, as my life unfolded and I made my mistakes that everybody makes. And this was later though, you know, in my 20s and 30s and 40s and still. but you know, at least people have an understanding that I'm human. Yeah, I hope. And all everybody is. So was Michael Landon. I mean, he had cracks and flaws just like anybody else, but I think the key is that he, and I follow this with him too, just wanted to be a loving person who contributed to the world in whatever way he could, and I feel the same way.
As the years went on, I mean, you got into acting because you loved to play roles, but here you were playing the same role for 10 years, and you had other roles within that time period, but did that feel confining?
It didn't feel confining to me until I was in my late teens and dating. And, you know, this was now the 80s and I'm still wearing gingham and petticoats. And although my hair got to go up into a bun and wasn't in the pigtails anymore, you know, I couldn't cut my hair like everybody else.
You couldn't have giant mall hair like the rest of us did.
I couldn't have giant mall hair, although
I think you dodged a bullet there.
I may have. Although there are some, if you get Google images and you go back to the 80s, there's some looks I regret. Truly. But don't we all? I mean, the 80s were, well, they were the 80s. I didn't really feel rebellious about the show. And I had opportunities, you know, when I turned about 14, a manager came into my life as well as my mother, and they crafted a career for me from there. And they created my production company, and I was able to do The Miracle Worker, and then the following year, The Diary of Anne Frank, and then the remake of Splendor in the Grass. And we did our own films, and they brilliantly, and I unwittingly as a part of it, set me up to have a career beyond Little House. So I never felt confined by it. I thought I was ready for the show to end. And then when they told me it was over, I was not ready for the show to end. I was not ready to say goodbye. And that was rough.
Now, the roles that you had that were concurrent with Little House on the Prairie, they had something in common with those roles. I mean, here you were also playing sort of iconic young women.
Real
iconic young women. After Little House on the Prairie, were you really struggling with being typecast?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, for a while in the early years, being up, but one of the reviews said, in the first feature film I did, said that I was perfectly cultish and pubescent, and I was 20. That was difficult. I'd go for cultish and pubescent now at 50. That would be great. Call me pubescent if you want. As opposed to perimenopausal, I'm great. I did feel it a little bit, and there's still a certain preconceived notion that when I walk into a room, and this happened a lot when I was the president of Screen Actors Guild, that I was either 12 or because I was a woman, I was not as smart as everybody else, or because I was just an actor, I didn't have an understanding of how the industry worked. And that's when people got a rude awakening. I would open my mouth and all the men in the room would go, she said what? she's right. That's brilliant. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway. And then I let them think it's their idea because I never felt the need to take credit for anything. As long as it got done, I was happy.
Did you think about leaving Hollywood, leaving that world? I mean, a lot of child actors, well, there are lots of issues with child actors, but a lot of them do end up just going elsewhere. They've had their Hollywood career.
Yeah, well, I did in high school because, you know, there was the I went to a school that the motto was college begins at 2. So it was a college preparatory school, and everybody was going off to college. And I did have aspirations, and I did apply to colleges, and I was going to study medicine. I wanted to become either a pediatric oncologist, which really was my passion, or an obstetrician. And my mom actually and my grandpa sat down and said, you know, you have a career already, and if you go to school, you've got 14 years before you even have a practice. And then who knows what happens after that. But this is a career, and I realized it wasn't actually a hobby. It was something that I had already established and could continue, God willing. And I decided not to go to college, which, you know, I can't say I regret it because everything led to where I am today, and that's great. But I have a lot of fun when I do films and I get to play a doctor. It's fantastic. And I actually absorb medical information like crazy. And, you know, everyone I know and all of my friends and family, we've all been through so many things. My friends actually call me Dr. Mel, and they call me for medical advice when their doctors give them diagnoses and stuff. It's quite extraordinary. So maybe, you know, in the next go around, in the next lifetime, I'll be a doctor. Who knows?
I'm talking with Melissa Gilbert, star of the Little House on the Prairie television series. She also has a new book out, My Prairie Cookbook, Memories and Frontier Food from My Little House to Yours. You're welcome to join our conversation. We're going to talk food here in a moment. We haven't quite done that yet. You're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or post on our Facebook page. And Mary is on the line from somewhere in Ireland. Hi, Mary.
Ooh.
Mary.
Hello.
Hi there. Where are you?
I'm calling from Ireland. Melissa knows me very well.
Okay. What would you like to talk about?
I talk to you on Twitter all the time.
Oh, hi.
Hello, Melissa.
Hi there.
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks.
Good, good.
Did you have
Go.
No, you go. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Melissa. My question today is, would you ever think of combining your love of acting with your love of cooking and putting out a TV show?
Thank you so much. And I have to tell you something. I was raised by an Irish nanny from Belfast. And I spent some time in Dublin doing a miniseries. And my blood is Irish all the way back. And my birth family. So your accent is like home for me. I'm sitting here just thinking, all I can see is green now. Tim and I have talked about it, actually. He thinks that would be a fantastic.
That's your husband.
Tim Busfield, my husband.
Who most of us know from 30-something.
Yep, or West Wing, or Field of Dreams, right. Or Revenge of the Nerds. He's just got credits that are ridiculous. We've talked about possibly doing a cooking show. He thinks it would be a really great idea, and I just kind of, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I guess I could do it. I don't know. I don't know who would watch. I don't know. Maybe. But I wouldn't rule it out. I definitely wouldn't rule it out. That would be an awful lot of fun because I do love to cook.
Mary, thank you so much for your call. And when I think of food from Little House on the Prairie, now I think about the books and I think about the cornbread that didn't need any sweetening except for Ma's handprint. And I think about the potatoes cooked in the coals of the fire. I think the cold prairie chicken hash that they had for breakfast. I'm not thinking about wonderful foods, although I mean, the food looked a lot better on the TV series than maybe it sounded in the book. What made you want to write about food?
Actually, the book started out as a scrapbook. It was just memories of Little House on the Prairie and behind-the-scenes photos, because after my autobiography came out, the one thing I heard from Little House fans was they wish there had been more of that, and I really couldn't do too much of that because that was 10 years of my life, but I was writing about 45 years of my life, so I had to kind of cover a lot of territory. So I went back, and I was approached by Abrams, and they said, you know what, why don't we do a scrapbook? And I said, well, that's a fantastic idea. So I went through all my mother's photo albums and my scrapbooks and pulled
this
all this
full
stuff.
Of wonderful pictures. So much fun.
Thanks. And thanks, Mom. And started writing all of these stories. And then I set up an email account where people could write in questions. And then I kind of condensed that into FAQs because there were thousands of emails that I had to condense and created all of these chapters. But the book was still thin. In the meantime, the whole time we're going through it and doing it, I would talk to my editors and I was always cooking. And they'd ask what I was cooking. And then it was fried chicken or meatloaf or shepherd's pie. Or for you Iowans, in the book is my corn and Vidalia onion salad recipe. And they said to me, are these your recipes? And I said, yeah. And they said, well, how many of those do you have? And I said, I don't know. And I pulled out the file, and there were like 200 recipes. And they said, we need 80. Let's make it a cookbook. And I thought, wow, what a great idea. The hard part that took years was converting my eyeballed mental recipes into actual measurements. You can't really tell someone, you know, like take a skillet and put a half an inch of oil in it. That's not a real measurement. So there was a recipe developer who worked on it. And then I myself started working on some of them and ate an awful lot of food for a while. I ate more than I normally do and had to buy slightly larger jeans for a while. But the result is this memory, this sort of scrapbook / cookbook. And, you know, it doesn't have a jacket. We made it so that it feels like a family heirloom because for me, that's what it is. And these are all the recipes I fed my kids for years. And for me also, you know, growing up and having kids in the house in this day and age, we insisted when they were small that, you know, we have meals together at least one or two times a week so that everybody could sit down and talk to one another and connect because it's really easy to disconnect these days. So that's also part of why I wrote the book.
Mara Lee is on the line in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Mara Lee.
Yes.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Hi. I just have to... First of all, I tell people, I work in a bookstore. I've been selling your book like crazy since it came out yesterday.
Yay!
And where's that little house book? I tell people how much it meant to me when I heard you interviewed years ago after the birth of your first child. I'm an adoptee also.
Oh.
And hearing you verbalize how finally after giving birth, you could see and feel that someone on this planet was related to you.
Mm-hmm.
I just had my fourth grandchild and was present at the birth for these kids, which meant so much since my birth mother could never tell me about birth. And my children were C-sections, but yes, same family resemblance and that connection. And you expressed that so well years back. And I just want to thank you for that. And it helped me grasp a little with my own relationships.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. And my first grandbaby, albeit step grandbaby, my eldest stepson, Sam Boxleitner, and his wife, Andrea, are having my first grandchild in November. Lulabel Rose is coming.
Oh, congratulations. Mara Lee, thank you so much for your call. And talking about your kids, people want to know, I'm sure, how many kids do you have?
327. We combined at this point because, you know, I've been married a couple of times, which is just a fact of my life that I'm still kind of coming to grips with when I refer to my ex-husbands, which I really never wanted to do, but that's the way it turned out. But now married to Tim, altogether there are 6 boys and 1 girl. There's 7 children. None of them live at home. The youngest just left last winter for college, not far from home where we live in Michigan. He's going to Lansing Community College, star of the theater department there. So now we're empty nesters, and the first grandbaby's coming in L.A. And I thought, you know, I thought when he left, I thought I was going to freak out. And I guess maybe because we were still newlyweds, Tim and I, that, you know, having Michael move out of the house, that's the youngest, having Michael move out, suddenly we had all this freedom to, you know, run to the kitchen naked and not have to worry about. We could say anything we wanted to. We could kiss each other while watching television and he wouldn't go, oh, my God, you guys, please, disgusting. So it was actually really great. And all right now, as of this moment, all the kids are happy. Everybody's in a great place. Everybody's in a job that they love. Everybody's financially secure. So my life is good.
It was interesting to read about your television family and your very real relationships with the people that you spent time with on television, and then your more complicated real family. But I mean, that must inform your idea of what a family is.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I think so much has changed over the years in the way everybody views family now. And, you know, I tell people I don't have a family tree, I have a family shrub. Actually, now I have an entire family, like, garden maze. Family can be anything now. Family can be a mom and a dad and a sister and a brother. Family can be two moms, two dads. Family can be one mom, one dad. Aunts and uncles can be raising children, grandparents. And I think as we grow up, certainly in my experience, I've created a family of friends and a circle of friends, and I have godchildren, and I have friends who are, my friend is godmother to my children, and we take that very seriously, and we all spend time together whenever possible. And I think family then grows and becomes something even more than, certainly more than I imagined.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking with Melissa Gilbert. Her latest book is My Prairie Cookbook, Memories and Frontier Food from My Little House to Yours. She'll be at the Cedar Rapids Public Library this afternoon at 2 o'clock. She will be at the Iowa City Public Library this evening at 7 o'clock. And you are welcome to join our conversation, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with Melissa Gilbert, of course, the star of the Little House on the Prairie series, which began almost exactly 40 years ago. Last Thursday, I think, 40 years ago.
Yep.
Last Thursday was the premiere of the series. And she has just published a new book called My Prairie Cookbook, Memories and Frontier Food from My Little House to Yours. We're talking memories and food this hour, and you are welcome to join our conversation. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And I mentioned this at the very beginning of the show, but for a lot of people, you are inseparable from Laura.
Yep.
And so do people ask you a lot of questions about, as if you were Laura? Do you get a lot of people who sort of have this idea that you did grow up in the 1870s?
Well, a couple of things happen. Sometimes people will be talking to me and they know that I'm Melissa, and they'll call me by my name, and then in the next sentence they'll go, "So Laura, but I mean Melissa." So that happens. And then there's a lot of people who are younger who think that I wrote the Little House on the Prairie books.
Hmm.
And I have to explain that there was a real Laura Ingalls Wilder. And actually, people ask me to autograph those books all the time. And I can't now that I'm an author, because I feel strange signing someone else's book. It's her. Those are her books. I don't mind having that sort of, I mean, it's a part of my identity, and it's not my secret identity. It's part of who I am. So that's fine if people remember me that way. Here's the other thing that happens. Mothers will walk by with their little tiny children and say, "Look, she's Laura on Little House on the Prairie." And the children will look at me and go, "Mom, she's a lady." Laura is a girl, little girl. What? They can't reconcile it.
You know?
And I'll get down next to them and I'll say, "Look at my face." And I'll smile and I'll say, "Do you see her in here?" And they go, "Yeah, oh, yeah, oh." It's really kind of like that Peter Pan thing, you know, in Hook.
Right.
That Robin Williams, oh, bless his heart, did when the kid pulled the skin back on his face and made him smile and said, "Oh, there you are, Peter." That's sort of what happens with little kids and me.
Now, in this book, and this is a tremendous gift to your fans, you came up with a list of your 10 favorite Little House on the Prairie episodes in no particular order, you were clear to say. But was that difficult for you?
It wasn't difficult. It just and actually, it was a great thing for me to be able to do, because I had to go back and watch them. I can't say I watched all 200 and whatever, blah, blah, the 222 of them and four movies. But I watched the ones that I remembered most clearly, and I watched about 20. So I then narrowed it down to my favorite 10. And it's although there are so many to choose from, these were the ones that either I had a more personal connection to because of something that was going on in my life, or that really moved me or made me laugh, or I felt were, you know, important. And they're all ones that I was in, although I don't think there was one I wasn't, at least for a second. But those were, you know, my top 10. Everybody asks me that, too, all the time. What are your favorite Little House on the Prairie episodes? And, of course, my number one is always my number one. But 10, I thought, was kind of an interesting chapter to write.
And what was number one?
The Lord is My Shepherd.
And that is one that you refer to, actually, as the unwatchable episode.
Yeah, I can't. Well, I mean, I can watch it. I just end up, you know, like laying on the couch just weeping 5 minutes in, and then I have to pause it. And then 10 minutes later, I'm crying again. I have to pause it. And it's not just because of what's in the story. And the strangest thing happens when I watch episodes. First, I watch them and I get caught up, like I don't know what's happening. Duh. And then I it hits me and I go, oh my God, that's me. And then I remember what was going on in my life at the time. And then, obviously, my memories of Michael and working with Michael and Ernie Borgnine and Victor French on that particular episode, and what an amazing, uplifting, validating feeling that was. And, you know, it just, I lose it. And that's the one episode where you can clearly see my connection with Michael.
And it is a truly heartbreaking episode. It's an episode.
It's tragic. I mean, yeah, bad things happen.
Your baby brother on the show dies in mm-hmm. that episode, and mm-hmm. you blame yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Although clearly you were not to blame, your character.
No. It's just because I didn't pray for him to get well. It wasn't meant to be that he got well. The real story that really happened to the Ingalls family, and I learned this later when I did my research when I played Ma in the musical when we went on tour. I had to revisit the whole thing from a different perspective. They had a son. Charles and Caroline Ingalls had a son. But they had him on the way from one place to another as they were moving, and he died in the middle of that journey. And they had to bury him on the side of not even a road, just bury him out in the middle of nowhere and leave him there and continue on. So that was the reality of what it was, right. And it was far darker, I think, than
even more
what we played. But you know, the one thing that we stuck to on the show for sure was the births and deaths. We went a little off in several different directions, added characters that didn't really exist. But if we had followed the actual books, we would have had 9 episodes. So, you know, we had 220 whatever blah blah blah,
right,
that I said earlier.
Right. Let's play a clip from your favorite episode, The Lord is My Shepherd.
Dear Pa, I can't write what's in my heart because I just can't get the words to come out the end of my pencil. I did a bad thing by having mean thoughts, but I know how I can make it right again. I can't tell you the rest because it's just between me and God. I will always remember today. I love you all. Laura.
All right, just a
I don't like you.
Sorry.
I don't. This is so mean. This is like the therapy session. I'm crying again. What the heck?
Did your kids watch these episodes?
Oh, they watched some of the more important ones, but I raised the 4 boys, and they were just not really very interested in Little House on the Prairie. They're like, it's a girl show. But they love the episodes with Albert, and they love the Halloween, you know, the funny episodes, and they watched some of the heavier stuff, but they really were not all that interested in it, to be honest. But then when I did the musical version, went on tour, my youngest son, Michael, played Willie and was in the kids' ensemble and went with me on tour. So he started watching them as part of his research smarty pants that he is, my theater star.
Now, one of the things I've been asking people about their favorite episodes, and so many people mention one of your favorites, Country Girls, which is in the first season where Mary and Laura go to school for the very first time. And when they get there, of course, there is Nellie Olson, the meanest girl on the prairie.
The meanest girl in the anywhere.
Right.
She makes the bad seed look gentle and sweet. She's like, yeah, there's no Chucky, a doll, is gentler.
But people loved that rivalry.
Yeah.
Just adored it.
It was an epic rivalry. And the reason why it worked so well, I think, is because we were such great friends and still are, that we trusted each other enough to beat the living crap out of each other all the time. When they, you know, we'd get really excited. Now you guys have a fist fight. Now you guys roll in the mud. Now you guys, you know, we get into a screaming match. Now you have to stare at each other with hatred. And it worked because we adored each other. And that casting was brilliant. Casting Alison Arngren was a great call. We were bosom buddies from that moment on.
And we have a clip from another one of your favorite episodes. This is Bunny. And this episode is Nellie pretending that she has been injured and can't
Evil.
Move her legs.
Evil.
All right. This is you giving her her comeuppance. Yeah. This one probably won't make you cry.
Phew. I got a rest.
That's all right with me.
It must feel good to be able to get out. Feels good to me. I haven't been able to go anywhere. Not with your homework and mine. I'm not complaining, mind you. It's the least I could do after what happened.
Are you all right?
Well, why do you ask that?
I don't know. You just seem to be acting funny.
There's your ma. I'll bet she'll be glad to see you all. Mrs. Olsen! Mrs. Olsen, up here!
There you are, pushing Nellie down the hill in a wheelchair and then proving that she can walk.
Yep. Yep. You know, justice had to be served, and it was served up in a very whatever happened to Baby Jane sort of way. She got me back for that a few years ago, and we tweeted about it openly. I went for my colonoscopy. And no one was around to take me at the time, and she volunteered, and she pushed my wheelchair into the surgery center, and we tweeted a photo of that, of her pushing me in a wheelchair. I wasn't going down a hill, it was comeuppance. I'm not going to get into it. Just know that my colonoscopy, everything was fine.
Good.
I'm clear. I got 7 years, and I'll do it again. That's the kind of friends we are. We can ask each other to do those sort of things for one another, and we're there for each other still now.
You also, in the book, you make a long list of bloopers, things that were gotten wrong on Little House on the Prairie. And I thought, oh, what fun. And I started reading them, and then I turned the page, and there were more, and then I turned the page. And there were more. Did you put that list together yourself, or is that something that's been compiled?
I didn't. That list actually was online at prairiefans.com. And I lifted the list from there and addressed each and every blooper. And that actually, hopefully, is a somewhat humorous chapter, because trying to explain some of the things that happened, or, you know, the truth be told, they were just, we did them because we had to.
My favorite, And this was number one, so it must be one of your favorites, mm-hmm. too, is that when many years later, in many years into the series, when Laura had her baby, Rose, she must have carried the baby for more than a year.
Because 4 seasons changed. Poor Laura.
She's freezing in the winter. She has a heat stroke in the summer, and she's still pregnant.
What was my answer?
Your take on it. I had never noticed this before. Nothing was ever easy back in those days. My first baby, Dakota, was 2 weeks late. I was miserable. Poor Laura, pregnant for more than a year.
There are some just glaring bloopers. I can't even say. I can't speak. That's how I'm humiliated by some of the things that we did.
I also have to ask you, because you mentioned fried chicken, which is a great-looking recipe in your book. Mm-hmm. You ate a lot of fried chicken on the series.
We did.
And where did that fried chicken come from?
That would be Kentucky Fried Chicken. On tremendously, and I loved it. You know, 11 herbs and spices. It was great stuff. Because the Ingalls family, you know, we ate simpler foods. The Olsen family had all the fancy stuff, right, and the roast beef. And there was always leftovers because they had lots for us to eat in the scenes. And so when the scene was done, everybody would just beeline and eat everything that was left over. And so would I, even though I'd already eaten on camera. And Michael Landon had this, he was a prankster. And I think one of his favorite things to do was when we did eating scenes would be to cut the camera without telling me and just say, eat, go on, keep eating, keep eating. And I would just keep eating and eating and eating. And then suddenly I'd get a spoonful of peas from off camera in my face. And I fell for it every time, but I never wanted to cut because I didn't want to be the one to end the scene when it wasn't over. So I would be stuffing my face with, you know, Denny Moore's canned beef stew and eating Kentucky Fried Chicken like, you know, it was nobody's business. My fried chicken's a little different, a lot different. But I grew up, I developed a great appreciation for fried chicken. I'm a bit of a fried chicken connoisseur.
Now, of course, Michael Landon passed away years ago, and I know that the two of you were estranged from each other for a while, but you reconciled before his death. You mentioned your relationship with the actress that played Nellie Olson. Are you also in touch with other people who are on the series?
Yeah. Like I said, Alison Arngrim, Nellie and I are still friends and close to this day. And Rachel Greenbush, Rachel Lindsay, who was one of the twins that played Carrie. And we all, and Karen Grassley, who played Ma, and Catherine McGregor, who played Mrs. Olson, and we communicate via email a lot. And then recently they gathered us all together in New York for a reunion to launch the Blu-ray DVDs, which all came out. And now they've come out as a complete set, all digitally remastered. And the really fun thing about the new DVDs is that everybody for years has watched the syndicated version, which has a lot of the show cut out to put in more commercials.
Right, they were very long episodes.
They were, yeah, close to, I think, you know, it was a 48-minute show, and then it was cut to 40 minutes. So all those scenes are put back in and remastered. It's really beautiful. So they reunited us on the Today Show, and Melissa Sue Anderson was there, and Charlotte Stewart, who plays Miss Beadle, was there, and Michael Landon Jr. was there, and Matthew Labrateau, who played Albert, was there. And we all kind of stay in touch, too. And then we also did a photograph for the Entertainment Weekly reunions issue that comes out in the fall. And they shot us with a real camera from the 1800s. And so we had to be still for 10 whole seconds. And they had to develop each picture. We could only do three because everybody had to catch planes and fly back to wherever they were. So that'll be interesting to see,
yeah,
I think, when it comes out. But we do. We really do stay in touch. And when, you know, sadly now we seem to gather more for funerals than anything else. We were all standing there doing this picture and we realized, and Dean Butler was there, who played Almanzo, that all of the men on the show that played all of the husbands and fathers and father figures, they are all gone now. Mm-hmm. Richard Bull is gone, who played Mr. Olson. Victor French is gone. Michael Landon is gone. Kevin Hagan, who played Doc Baker, is gone. They're all gone. It's just the girls and Dean and Matt Labrateau.
Melissa, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my gravy. It's over?
It's over.
Goodness.
It went awfully fast.
That
thank
was a
you.
Quick hour. Thank you so much.
Melissa Gilbert, her new book is My Prairie Cookbook, Memories and Frontier Food from My Little House to Yours. She'll be at the Cedar Rapids Public Library this afternoon at 2 and the Iowa City Public Library this evening at 7. This is Talk of Iowa.